I did it!
That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Wax on. Wax off.
Feel the rhythm! Feel the rhyme! Get on up! It's bobsled time!
Hello and welcome to the World Beat Pod, the 32 Fans podcast, where we discuss all things movies, past, present, and occasionally future. My name is Sammy Chester, and today we are deep into the Sports Movie Tournament of Champions, our 64 movie bracket set up to determine the best sport movie of all time. This bracket is the final stretch of a 10-month odyssey. We've watched nearly 300 movies. We finally now arrived to the Tournament of Champions. What we did is we put it into four regions. Today we're going to decide the four movies from the 16-movie Miyagi region, which will advance to the Sweet 16. Joining me to do this momentous task, I would argue, the most expert guest we have ever had discussing sports movies with us. Welcome to the podcast, Kyle Bandujo, a former college athlete, freelance writer, and host of two podcasts, From Phenom to the Farm and Big Screen Sports. Kyle, am I right in arguing that you may be one of the top experts
Man,
on sports movies?
That is very high praise. First off, thanks for having me. I don't know about expert. I watch a lot of sports movies. I have probably an unhealthy obsession with sports movies, diving in deep. So I don't know if I'm an expert. I watch a lot of them. So you can say that.
Tell us about Big Screen Sports, because that to me is your credibility in your corner as to why you get to wear the laurels of a movie sports expert.
Big Screen Sports is a podcast I've been doing for about a year. The genesis of which was initially just focusing on strictly on the sports related content of sports movies. What was realistic, what was authentic, what wasn't, how you could have improved it, etc. Each week on a normal episode, a guest and I will tackle a specific sports movie. We do focus on the sports authenticity, have a category for that. What was realistic, what wasn't. We talk about our favorite characters, favorite lines, how we would improve the movie if the movie could use any sort of improvement. Some movies more so than others. You know, I call it the sports movie podcast. It's kind of just an appreciation of sports films.
Some of the sports movies really lean into that gritty, hard feel. And others just go flying way off into space.
Yeah, movies like that are kind of fantasy or fictional or parody, but are leaning into that or are self-aware of that, it's still doable, I think. You can still have a good sports movie. One of my favorite sports movies of all time, Field of Dreams, is about a dead baseball team coming back to play. So if you're leaning into that, that's one thing. But if you're a movie like Trouble with the Curve, which is the worst sports movie of all time, and you think you're being really authentic, and in fact, you're being the exact opposite, that's where on Big Screen Sports, I really like to slam a sports movie.
What would you say is the origin movie for your podcast? Or more interestingly, what's your own sports movie origin story?
I've always loved sports movies, but I will say that it's a mix of, I would say the actual origin is Remember the Titans, because I was freelancing for a website called Postgrad Problems about 4 or 5 years ago. And I wrote an article kind of about the football problems with Remember the Titans. Remember the Titans is a very good movie. It's a very good performance by Denzel. It's very rewatchable, but there's some glaring football issues. It's stuff that I don't understand why. Like, for instance, in halftime of the championship game, it's the moment where Coach Yost has to kind of eat his pride and say, you know, Herman, I need your help. I need you to help me, you know, run the defense. Except that the offense, Herman's offense hasn't scored. Coach Yost's defense has held the other team into single digits, so it's the offense is really, it's like to no one, you know, it's stuff like that doesn't make sense. And so I wrote a piece about that, and it's kind of been this idea that has spawned from that. And Trouble with the Curve is the worst example of it, because there's almost nothing authentic or that works sports wise about that movie, and yet it thinks it's a very intelligent sports movie. So it's kind of a mix of Remember the Titans and Trouble with the Curve.
One of the things I noticed with the different guest judges we've had on is that there's such a heavy element of nostalgia, and that's because, as you know, the late 80s, early 90s was sort of a golden time for great sports movies, or just sports movies in general.
Yeah, the heyday.
And so, yeah, and so people of our generation who tapped into something like Rookie of the Year or Sandlot, or even Bull Durham, which we'll discuss today, during that time period, the nostalgia factor can make you love that more than something that came out in the last 15 years. You know, so the Moneyballs of the world, I found in looking how judges cast their vote, often have trouble against someone's childhood favorite. So that's why I was curious and asking if there was maybe some childhood favorite at the bottom of your ladder.
Rookie of the Year is a movie that greatly benefits from childhood nostalgia as far as how people view it. Upon rewatch as an adult in this century, it does not hold up very well.
Angels of the Outfield suffers from that even more so. You're a Minnesota Twins fan?
Yes.
I'm from Minnesota myself, so obviously I'm anything Minnesota sports.
I inherited Minnesota Twins fanhood from my dad, who was a big Tony Oliva fan when he was growing up, and so I've always been on the Twins. And speaking of the Twins and sports movies, Little Big League is actually a movie that holds up very well compared to its compatriots and kind of the family-friendly baseball movie genre of Rookie of the Year and Angels in the Outfield. Little Big League is actually still really good.
It's always my favorite of them, but I was biased. We did our baseball bracket several months ago. Talk about a competitive movie bracket. I mean, there's so many good baseball movies. I think basketball and football hold up amongst the best, but in terms of, you know, 10 to 20, baseball has the best movie. Given the sport, it should have a deep bench. Let's jump into the bracket. How does that sound?
Yeah, perfect. Let's go.
The Miyagi region is going to be home to 16 movies. We seeded these movies based on how they performed in those single sports brackets that we hosted over the last 10 months. In other words, if you are confused, as you may be as we move forward, that Damn United has the number one seed and a movie like Bull Durham is only number 14, that's because Damn United won our soccer movies tournament and critics love it. And Bull Durham barely made it out of that super competitive baseball tourney. I think it was the number 5. And there was a lot of great baseball movies, frankly, that I wish could have made it and didn't. Kyle and I are your judges. Normally, we would have a second co-host on to decide ties. He couldn't join on. And therefore, what I did is we randomly selected one of the brackets sent in by you listeners. And therefore, Jim Crumley, one of our longest listeners, your bracket will break any ties that may occur. It's going to be up to me and Kyle to decide if we even get there. Jim, you're in our back pocket. Number one or number 16. Both of these are 2009 movies. Damn United, a soccer movie. That's going to be at number one. And Whip It. Number 16, that's about a sport called roller derby. Kyle, I just finished watching Whip It for the first time right before we came on air. I may have too many questions to ask you.
People should give Whip It more of a chance. Whip It is more of a coming-of-age movie than it is, I think, a sports movie. I really enjoy Whip It. I think I caught it on a TV rewatch. I think the Damn United is probably the pick here.
When did you first see Damn United?
It's probably been longer since I've seen Damn United since Whip It. I originally haven't gotten a rewatch of Damned United in years. I probably saw Damned United closer to when it actually came out. Michael Sheen is hard to pick against. I'm big on him in anything. He's excellent.
7 Days in Hell did really well. Spoilers, it's in the Sweet 16. And 7 Days in Hell has so many great funny cameos, but Michael Sheen is incredible.
Michael Sheen is like the talk show host who's just overly horny for Kit Harington. It's amazing.
Incredible there. He's really good here. I mean, what I find interesting about this matchup is these are two movies where I'm really disinterested in the actual sport. And I found that made it harder to appreciate both movies. And what's weird is that Warrior is one of my all-time favorite sports movies, and I don't care about MMA at all. And yet I love Warrior.
Same. I have no idea. I have no idea about anything MMA-wise besides the biggest guys, and Warrior's fantastic. I mean, Gavin O'Connor, I have not yet seen The Way Back, but Gavin O'Connor just makes incredible sports movies.
Because I kept thinking when I watched Damn United, just so people know, it's a story set back in, I think, the 60s, a true life story of an asshole of a British coach who in the Premier League is taken from a really bad team to the sort of top team at the time. And he's such an asshole, he only lasts for like a month and then they kick him out. And it's a completely true story. A lot of the sort of funnier parts of the movie you can find on YouTube, the app, because he was interviewed on TV at the time. Really arrogant. And Michael Sheen plays him. And what I kept thinking when I saw Damn United is, if this was the same narrative, the same story, but set, let's say, in the 1980s Yankees or a well-known U.S. professional team with a similar story of a coach, I think the movie would be so powerful because I would appreciate the context so much more. Premier League, Leeds United, it all kind of was way over my head. I was surprised that mattered. And obviously, I mean, like roller derby. Have you ever seen roller derby live?
I have never seen Roller Derby live, no. I had heard of it, and part of what I like about Whippin, I believe, if I'm remembering this correctly, it occurs in a small Texas town, kind of near Austin, which is kind of near where I live. I kind of appreciated that part of it.
I don't know if you like or if you've seen Fever Pitch, but I think the entire cast of that movie, that fan movie with
Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore directed Whippet, and Jimmy Fallon has this way too prominent role in the movie, and all the side characters, including Richard Wilson, I think, he's one of the Wilson brothers. He plays the coach in Whippet. The entire cast of that movie is also the cast of Whippet. So it's a little weird. I don't know if the movies were made back to back. To me, I would just compare the two movies based on their coaches. It sounded like your vote went for Damn United.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to join you because obviously the coach of Damn United is Michael Sheen and the coach of Whip It is discount Matthew McConaughey. If you imagine Matthew McConaughey and We Are Marshall not playing the Wilson brother who looks the most like him, Owen Wilson, but Richard Wilson trying to sort of do a somewhat Matthew McConaughey in We Are Marshall, that's Richard Wilson in this movie, but he doesn't do it very well. I'm going to have to go for Damn United. I don't know how well you remember Whip It because I just got off seeing the movie. There's a scene there where the two characters, the love interests, they jump into the pool to make out and presumably have pool sex. And one, I don't really know if underwater pool sex is a thing, but I don't know, since you grew up in Texas, we may know more about that.
So I don't think physically that works very well.
Two, I just thought it was a very not today type scene because they jump into the pool without checking their pockets for wallets, phones, or anything, particularly phones. I just felt like in today's day and age, you would never jump into a pool to have underwater pool sex without at least throwing your phone to the side.
Jumping in the pool when you're with your clothes on has been something that's kind of fallen by the wayside day and age because of phones and technology. And like someone might be wearing an Apple Watch or something, like it's just not happening.
Given that you know you won't be able to accomplish much there, it's better just to stay on the outside looking in. Early on in Whip It, Andrew Wilson, the coach, walks up and he just says line for line Paul Newman's line from Slapshot. These are the Hansen twins. They just came up from a small team in Ottawa. They're really going to like help us be tough.
I missed that in my original Whippet watch.
It's clearly very intentional. I mean, he like stops, looks at the screen, and gives his best Paul Newman impression. And they don't do anything with those characters the rest of the movie. But it's kind of a funny shout out. I mean, I guess as a whole, the movie was going for sort of a Slapshot-esque Bendit like Beckham mashup. So, but I wouldn't give it. I think both Bendit like Beckham and Slapshot are probably better movies, but who knows. Clearly, Damn United is going to move forward. Let's look at the next matchup. Number 8, The Sandlot, 1993, of course, a baseball movie, versus number 9, Endless Summer, a classic doc from 1966 about surfing. Which one of these are you going to go with?
If this was an actual March Madness matchup, The Sandlot would beat The Endless Summer by 45 points.
Endless Summer would show up in their sandals to play the game, and that would be about as memorable as the game would be.
The thing that's the most eternal about Endless Summer is that classic poster. It's adorning the walls of 90% of beach houses and on the American coast. But we watched it, you know, I would probably guess in middle school. I haven't watched it again. I've seen The Sandlot 576 times. So Sandlot's a clear winner there for me.
I saw The Sandlot when we did our baseball episodes ago, and I was amazed how much it still holds up. To me, it's sort of the king of nostalgic baseball movies. It's built on nostalgia. People always argue that Field of Dreams is the definitive, the mystery and magicness of baseball. I think Sandlot is more the majesty of baseball. That scene on the 4th of July when they're biking off to play baseball under the fireworks, to me, that is baseball. To me, that
is so beautiful. They're like 1A, 1B. Field of Dreams has this really great monologue. Sandlot has that 4th of July scene and just the playing pickup games with your friends before baseball is anything more than just a sport you do for fun. They're 1A, 1B in the nostalgia factor for me.
Listeners who want to check out Endless Summer, it's much loopier than you kind of expect, and it's very, very much of its time. It's this narrator who just goes with two of his buddies off to go surfing in Africa and I think India and Australia, and then eventually make their way back to California. And the entire movie is this loosey-goosey narrator just talking about his two friends as they walk around the beach and surf with Africans. Spent a lot of time in South Africa, as I recall. I was surprised at how sort of loopy it was, but I would say it's more of a screensaver than a movie, but if you're into surfing, it's obviously a must-watch. Let's jump to the second round right away, because we're going to have Damn United go up against The Sandlot. Perhaps both of these will get a little bit more competition than they got in round one. Kyle, which way are you going?
I think The Sandlot probably wins this game by 20.
Yeah.
The Sandlot, again, I mean, it's an iconic film. I just don't, it's not going to be beat by The Damned United, which is a good film in its own right, but it's going up against a powerhouse.
You could take the 10th most interesting character in Sandlot, and he's super interesting and well-formed, and somehow those like no-name kid actors just knock the ball out of the park, each of them. And Damned United has one dynamic, dominant star who's really, really fascinating, but no one else in the movie does much at all. Maybe his assistant coach friend, who's the actor, escapes me. No one else is memorable. There's no other real characters in the movie.
Michael Sheen can't carry everything on his shoulders.
That's why 7 Days in Hell is in the Sweet 16, but Damned United is not. So Michael Sheen is still with us. Sandlot moves on. Let's go to the next four. Number 5, a movie that very few people probably had heard about. I had never heard about until I started looking into our racing movies. And this one was just being recommended by everyone who's hardcore into racing movies. That's because the number 5 movie is TT3D, Closer to the Edge, a 2011 documentary about motorbike racing, against number 12, Any Given Sunday, which came out in 1999. Of course, it's a well-known football movie. TT3D, AGS, which way are you going, Kyle?
Any Given Sunday is one of the first fictional looks you get at what the NFL or what professional, the darker side of professional football. A lot of professional football in movies had been a little watered down, and it's gritty. It's got a great cast. It's got a young Jamie Foxx. You've got Dennis Quaid, Al Pacino, Cameron Diaz as a villain. I love Any Given Sunday. I can fully admit that I have not seen this racing documentary. Where did it fall in terms of other racing documentaries like Senna and anything like that?
Senna was our number one seed going into the racing. We had a separate corner for motor racing, and TT3D took down Senna, finished as the top motor racing, but then we threw all racing together. So running racing, horse racing, it was all racing as far as we were concerned. So TT3D was definitely the number one in front of Rush, great F1 movie.
I love Rush, and if I were given Any Given Sunday versus Rush, I would pick Rush. TT3D ahead of Rush, just by that math, I would have to give it to TT3D.
You should vote for Any Given Sunday if that's the one you've seen and that's the one you love. I mean, Any Given Sunday's problem is it has that Oliver Stone myopia. It's just too overpacked. There's just so much going on. There's much noise. There's so much sound. There's so much stories. There's so much narrative. Amazing cast. James Wood, Lawrence Taylor, the two of them. You know, Latimer from The Program. Shout out to The Program. The guy who plays Latimer in The Program is in this movie as well. You know when it's him. He does something very much like Latimer. The cast is like the problem of the movie. It's an overpacked cast, as you said. TT3D, it's incredibly intense. It's really intense, like good documentaries, I think, should be. It is about the 2010 motorcycle race that happens every year on the Isle of Man, which is this little island off the coast of the UK somewhere. And it's one of the most dangerous races in the world. Over 250 people have died doing the course. They've been doing it for, I think, like 100 plus years. And this is about one particular year, which, spoiler, had a lot of people die. The movie is intense. I mean, they have like those cameras that are in the people's heads. So you're seeing things at hundreds of miles an hour. I wish I could have seen it on a big screen. I saw it actually commuting to work on a high-speed train. And that sort of added to the thrill. It is really, really special. Basically, you get into the heads and the hearts of these motorbike racers who are just regular guys. You know, they're not professional. You really understand why they do this. And then, you know, some of the people you're following don't make it. And then they go and speak to their families. Their families are just, yeah, he died doing what he loved. I would raise my kids to do exactly the same thing. And you're like, holy F.
Yeah, that's a definite theme of racing. Yeah, the thing I know that TT3D does not have is the inches speech that Al Pacino gives at Any Given Sunday. So for that reason, I will vote for Any Given Sunday.
I will vote for TT3D. In my own bracket, it does go to the Sweet 16. But let's see what Jim Crumley, our listener, said. I'm opening up his bracket here. I did not look at this beforehand. So I can tell you for this matchup, he does have Any Given Sunday. So Any Given Sunday will move on, and TT3D will go back to the lost pages of history. So hopefully a few listeners will now check it out. It's out there. I think it's entirely on YouTube. So the entire movie is on YouTube. A lot of documentaries, a lot of sports documentaries are on YouTube in their entirety. The next matchup, the number 4, Red Army, another documentary, 2014 hockey movie against number 13, This Sporting Life. It is, I think, the earliest movie of the 64 in our tournament. It came out in 1963, and it's a classic British movie about rugby. Red Army tells you the story of the Soviet Cold War hockey team, the dominant team that in Miracle, of course. It's fun. I saw
when we did our hockey bracket, I saw Miracle and Red Army back to back, and it's really sort of, you appreciate Miracle a ton more if you've seen Red Army. You appreciate what they were going up against.
It's not the 30 for 30, is it?
I don't think it's the 30 for 30. I know they came out earlier in 2019 with a movie about the Russian military hockey team that covered a lot of the same ground. I didn't have a chance to see it. Don't believe this is the 30 for 30. The story tells itself. They had to defect from the Soviet Union. The captain of the Red Army hockey team, Slava Fedosov, he ended up, you know, moving on to the Detroit Red Wings, where he ended up joining up on the same line as an old Russian colleague of his who had, like, snitched on him to the KGB, and they had never spoken for 15 years, and they were playing in the NHL together. Drama there is so obvious. What holds the movie back is that the Russians in it are just so stone-faced. The movie literally starts with the director, who I think is a guy our age. The director's trying to get Fedosov to speak to him, and Fedosov is, like, answering his phone and basically completely brushing off the director who made the movie, and that's how the movie starts. So the movie embraces the fact that these guys are so cold and distant, but they are cold and distant, and therefore I think it doesn't quite have the necessary charm. The sporting life is the British version of Raging Bull. Richard Harris stars as this very poor, lower class, very violent rugby guy who is also has problems at home, problems with the woman he's in love with who rejects him. He's super violent. The movie is super glum. The problem is the movie doesn't really go anywhere. It has a lot of plots that don't go anywhere. And therefore, I'm going to give my vote to Red Army. It's like one of those documentaries where just on the strength of the story of what happened, that's reason enough to watch it. You know, it's better than the Wikipedia.
I told you beforehand that I hadn't seen Red Army. I'm looking at the Wikipedia and the poster now. I have seen Red Army. This documentary is excellent. Red Army moves on. I always thought that was a 30 for 30, and I guess it wasn't. Because one of the interesting things that these guys say is that the Miracle on Ice game was not a big deal for them.
Yeah,
they all just hated the coach.
The dynamic between their coach is intense. I'm not a huge hockey fan, even though I'm from Minnesota. Red Army is one of those things that'll make you appreciate hockey a lot more. I saw a bunch of movies about people playing up against the Red Army. They were such a dominant force for 40 years. In international hockey that they figure in a lot of hockey movies. So yeah, it's going to go into round two. It is going up against Any Given Sunday, of course. Any Given Sunday, mm-hmm. Red Army. Kyle, you've seen both of these. Which one's getting your pick?
I think Red Army's getting my pick. Red Army's a really interesting documentary.
I was going to go for Any Given Sunday. I voted against it in the first round. I remember the most memorable part of Red Army is the interview they do with this KGB guy where he's talking about how, yeah, he ruined the hockey players' lives. And then he's also playing with his grandchild on the side. And I love moments in documentaries like they put the mundane next to the dramatic. This is real life. KGB guys mm-hmm. are retired grandfathers playing with their children on a park bench. And that scene really stood out to me. But again, just the players were distant and it was hard to be engaged. Lawrence Taylor in Any Given Sunday is, I think, one of the all-time great actual sports players acting in a movie. And
he's a lot better than you think he'd be.
Yeah. I read Michael Clark Duncan thought he had the role, and they both showed up, and they both had the uniform. And then it was only after, I think, the first few days that they were like, no, we're going with the legit athlete. I'm going to give it to Any Given Sunday. That means we're going to have to go to our tiebreaker, Jim. Interestingly, he had Any Given Sunday and Red Army both winning their first round. And yet he gave the tie
Perfect.
To Any Given Sunday. Yeah, actually looking at the top half of his bracket, he has Sandlot there as well. He got to the same conclusion we did. I guess he helped us get to this conclusion, so there you go. Where would you go with the Sandlot Any Given Sunday matchup?
Sandlot easy. It's like, I think Sandlot wins by 10. So Sandlot beats Endless Summer by 40. It beats Damned United by about 30. And then it beats Any Given Sunday by like 10, 15.
That's the first challenger it has where it's a legit school. It's not a mid-major. It's playing a program that has been there before, but even with Al Pacino, it doesn't have enough that mm-hmm. it takes. I agree with you. I think Sandlot has a legit chance. I was surprised it didn't win the baseball. Baseball was won, by the way, by Major League. Had a guest who is a baseball scout, and he was big, as you would guess, on Moneyball, but he was even bigger on Major League. And I think they say Major League is most baseball players' favorite baseball movie.
Major League is excellent.
For us, Major League was one, Field of Dreams was two, and Sandlot, I don't quite recall. I think it was right below Moneyball. But I would give Sandlot a good chance to go all the way to check back in on it later. Let's jump to the next matchup, because we're back in round one. We have another, I believe, same year matchup, 2001. We tabulated the 64 movies in our tournament, what years they all came out, to see what decades really stood out. And the decades were actually pretty evenly mixed. But 2001 surprisingly had a ton of sports movies. And 2011 had a ton of sports movies. So that may mean that next year we're in for a good year for sports movies, the beginning of a decade.
We could use it.
Or them. The 2001 Face-Off is number 6 Shaolin Soccer. I won't even say what sport that is, going up against number 11 Dogtown and the Z-Boys, which is a documentary about skateboarding. You have a favorite, Kyle?
I do, and it's Z-Boys. I'm a little biased too because I love the movie Lords of Dogtown, which is based off this documentary, but it's a fantastic documentary about kind of like the spark that started skateboarding. Seen this one a few times. I've seen Lords of Dogtown even more. This is an excellent documentary. Stacy Peralta, who was right there in the mix when the actual events of the documentary occurred and then became, you know, a skateboard team magnet and a filmmaker, made the documentary. It's very well done. It's a very good watch. Anytime I see it on, it's on. Like, I think it does an HBO run sometimes. I will turn it on.
There was a bunch of skateboarding movies that came out in 2018. The one that I really loved was Minding the Gap, which is also a documentary. It's this incredible documentary where one of the skateboarders, sort of like, I guess, Stacy Peralta, they discuss it in Z-Boys, that part of the movement was sort of capturing what they were doing on film in sort of an alternative way. That was part of what kind of came about. It was, you know, documenting the moves. So Minding the Gap is also pretty special. It didn't. Minding the Gap, though, is not a sports movie. Well, Dogtown and the Z-Boys is pretty much a sports movie. Sometimes in sports movies, the weaker part of the movie, though, will be the straight-up sports. And to me, that was the issue with Dogtown. The part I like the most is where they're discussing the emergence of the skateboarding movement that they were doing in L.A., in California. And then they discuss how they were breaking into all these pools. I mean, I love that. And just the footage. They would just go around, break into rich people's pools during a hot, dry summer, and skate around in the pools because it's an excellent place to skate.
Yeah, all the old footage is so cool.
I didn't even know, frankly, that there was a legit skateboarding professional league that these guys then became part of. It's very jarring to see them go from messing around in pools to wearing uniforms and having numbers and competing. But I guess it was for them as well, which explains why some of them didn't make it or didn't, you know, go over.
Yeah.
I don't like Shaolin Soccer.
Kind of gimmicky.
Movies, I've seen better versions of the same thing, which is just gimmicky kung fu. I don't know why Stephen Chow decided to apply that to soccer, but if people want to watch it and they haven't, check out the version without subtitles on YouTube. Just watch it in Chinese. Watch the ridiculousness. Easy win for Z-Boys. Number 3, Breaking Away. Pretty high seed. Came out in 1979. It is the original biking sports movie. Against number 14, Bull Durham, 1988, one of the great baseball movies. Now, hear my piece, Kyle, before you tell us who's your winner. The reason I said it might be an incredible challenge is that AFI, the American Film Institute, lists 10 movies as the best 10 sports movies of all time. And guess what? Both of these are on their list. This is the only matchup in our entire first round, which has two of what the AFI says are the best sports movies of all time going up head-to-head. Not only that, but you know what is going head-to-head in this matchup besides a 70s biking movie and an 80s baseball movie? Depending how well you know Breaking Away. I don't know the last time you saw it. Dennis Quaid in Breaking Away against Kevin Costner in Bull Durham. And to me, Quaid and Costner are... like, when you don't get Costner in a movie, I think you put in Dennis Quaid. Both of them have been in tons of sports movies.
They're a replacement for each other. Yeah, Breaking Away has a great cast. It's got Quaid, it's got Daniel Stern, Jackie Earle Haley... but Bull Durham is my favorite movie, probably favorite baseball movie of all time. It is perfectly done. Costner is peak Costner. Incredible performance as Crash Davis. Love Tim Robbins' new Lelouch. Love Sarandon. Love every part of this movie. How quotable it is. It is on the Mount Rushmore of sports movies. Bull Durham, moving on if you've got my vote.
I find a lot of the great sports movies overrated, and I think the reason is that most people who just throw together a ranking of sports movies, unlike you and me, they haven't actually seen them. They're sort of just going back on nostalgia. And that's because sports movies don't have the best rep, the best credibility, the best reputation. So these critics are just throwing together a list for Newsweek or USA Today or whoever it is. And they kind of go like, oh, what are considered the good sports movies? Okay, I'll put Hoosiers in there. I'll put et cetera in there. And they don't really, I feel, sit down and rewatch the movies. Bull Durham, I would say, of the movies that is considered an all-timer, holds up better than most of them. Bull Durham lasts because of its script. It probably has the best script in any sports movie. I mean, that script, even with a lesser cast, I think would be really special. So I'm definitely not as big on Bull Durham as you, and I definitely appreciate Dennis Quaid's abs in Breaking Away. I don't think he wears a t-shirt the entire movie.
Definitely peak young Dennis Quaid.
You know which one of these two guys has been in more sports movies, Quaid or Costner?
So you're saying it's Quaid because Quaid's got this. He's got The Rookie. He's got Any Given Sunday.
He's been a coach in a few movies.
The Syracuse, the Ernie Davis movie.
Yes,
coach in that.
Yes. Good call. Yeah, that was it. Omar Epps has been in a few, but not as many as these two guys. I don't like The Rookie. I don't know where The Rookie goes on your authenticity metric. But I found The Rookie to be almost unwatchable.
It's very Disney-fied,
yeah,
for sure.
His son shouldn't be in the movie. Talk about good child movie actors in baseball movies like The Sandlot. And then you have the son in The Rookie. Given so many baseball movies are set in the minors, I definitely now know about minor league baseball from baseball league movie, the minor league. Like, I'm not enough of a baseball fan where I have a favorite minor league team. Given so many baseball movies correctly do what I think good sports movies do, which is they stay in the minors, they stay in high school and college, because I think that's where sports are more pure than the majors. Your knowledge of like minor league baseball, would you say it is, has it been formed by movies like Sugar and Bull Durham?
Yeah, I love minor league baseball. I've always loved minor league baseball. I actually interned for two minor league teams when I was in college. I've been a big time like Baseball America reader for, you know, since I started reading online. And their stuff is more minor league and prospect stuff. But I do think minor league baseball can come out a little better on film. I think partly because it's a little easier to film. It's a little easier to get those kind of minor league vibes than it is to replicate, you know, the vibes of a major league stadium, a major league atmosphere, major league clubhouse. A few movies try. I do think that minor league baseball is probably depicted a little better on film, especially in the best examples like Bull Durham, Sugar, like you mentioned, like movies like that do an excellent job.
I like the grittiness of sports movies. Something about minor leagues is much grittier. You know, it's rough around the edges. A character like the girl in Bull Durham, the love interest, she can legitimately seem to exist, and you can imagine her existing in minor league baseball. I don't know if you can imagine her existing in the same way in the majors.
That whole plot line isn't going to happen in that way.
So Bull Durham is going to crush Breaking Away. I tried to watch Breaking Away with some friends of mine who weren't sports movie fans. It didn't hold up. I mean, some of the 70s stuff is actually kind of fun. The townies versus the college kids and whatnot. But the sports in it is quite bad. This is before I think we knew how to make a good sports movie. Yeah, so Breaking Away is going to fall down. I wouldn't even recommend people to check it out. Obviously, Bull Durham is a must watch. And the next round, it sounds like it's going to be vanilla for you. Bull Durham versus Dogtown and the Z-Boys.
Not even a contest. It's Bull Durham. And I mean, and that's a lot of baseball bias for me. I think the two movies I've had kind of sailing through are Bull Durham and Sandlot. But no contest for me there.
Jim, our listener, voted for Breaking Away in round one. So he must have like a Bull Durham issue because he had Breaking Away running away with it in round one. And then he actually has Breaking Away, without spoiling it too much, going all the way to the final four. So maybe he'll tell us on Twitter. There is a subset of people, I think, who love Breaking Away. But part of that might be there is no other credible narrative biking movie. There's a few documentaries about Armstrong. But let me do the next matchup quick. It's number 7, Deep Water, in round one. Came out in 2006. It's a boat racing movie going up against number 10, Tokyo Olympiad, which came out in 1965. One earlier movies, though, again, The Sporting Life took the cake. The Tokyo Olympiad is not only an Olympics movie, but we should point this out. Every single Olympics since Leni Riefenstahl, and I think even before her, Hitler's Berlin documentary, and there's always an official documentary made of each Olympic Games. And Tokyo Olympiad was the one made the last time Tokyo had the Olympics. And frankly, the way things are going, it might be still the only time Tokyo has hosted the Olympics, which was in 1964. So they had it in 1964. And because the Japanese are kind of crazy, they gave a very unconventional director the reins to make the official Olympics documentary. And he made a very eclectic movie. You've probably seen one scene, which is there's a classic movie scene showing from a real far distance, people holding the torch and running higher distance, the base of Mount Fuji. That scene is really beautifully done. But he captures all the great moments, but he also just captures just tons of silly little things. Like, he captures the guys, the sharpshooters, he captures them like shooting their shots and then like sitting down and eating like a ham sandwich, like they eat their lunch in between shots. Like, he has a very weird, you wouldn't expect it from an official Olympics movie. Entire thing, officially this time, can be found on YouTube, because the Olympics, most of their featurettes are online. So definitely I would recommend that's something to check out, but it's 3 hours long. So you put it on in the background while you do something else.
the time investment.
Yeah. Assuming we're not going to have the Olympics in Tokyo in 3 months, unfortunately due to Corona, probably, you know, skip the whatever it is, the 100 hours you would have put into the Olympics and check out, out of respect for the Japanese, check out the last time they hosted the games. Deepwater is about one of the craziest sports stories of all time. 5 movies have been made about this story. One of them was a Soviet propaganda movie because it's about something that happened in the 60s. It was a Soviet propaganda movie about the story talking about how corrupt the West is. What the story is that in 1968, there was something called the Golden Globe, which was a race around the world by boat, by like yachts, like small boats. And it was the first time anyone would ever sail around the world from starting in England and ending in England. And a bunch of like professional or like, you know, sailors who knew what they were doing entered the race. And then this one guy who was completely inexperienced, he like had a small rowboat, but that was all. He didn't really know what he was doing. He decided to mortgage his house, quit his job, beggar for money, and he entered the tournament. And he seemed to be winning the tournament completely to everyone's surprise. He became an international hero. He was on the front page of every newspaper. This is the late 60s. You know, Twitter would have been going nuts. And I will spoil this because people should know slash read the Wikipedia article going into it probably. Can you guess what happened?
Sounds familiar, but I don't think I've heard it in full.
The reason it might sound familiar is the latest version of this is Colin Firth starred in a dramatization of the movie called The Mercy that came out, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. Essentially what happened to this dude, this British guy, is his boat immediately took on water and he realized he had no chance in hell of making it alive across the oceans. Like, I think the Pacific Ocean or the Indian Ocean is most dangerous. He knew he had no chance. His boat was taking on water. He was still in the Atlantic Ocean. He'd been on the water for like 2 weeks. And so what he did is he sailed off near Brazil and decided he would just wait while everyone else sailed around the world and came all the way back. And then he would just rejoin them and he would just radio in false codes, like longitude and latitudes. To HQ, and basically he completely cheated.
Incredible stuff.
And he cheated thinking that, okay, he'll finish in last place, but he'll have his dignity salvaged. He won't have to go back as a failure to his family. And you know, that was very important as, I guess, a British guy in the 60s. And yet what happened is every single one of the other competitors kept on dropping out to the point where he was gonna win the race. And when he realized that he was gonna come back and win the race, and it was gonna destroy him because he knew his fake cheats couldn't hold up scrutiny, so then he killed himself. And he was never found to this day. His boat was found empty off the coast of Brazil.
I've gotta go watch it.
There are 5 movies to choose from in watching it. It's a completely crazy story. I won't ruin any more to say that one of the other competitors is incredible. He's this French guy who basically decided when he was about to win the race just to do something completely crazy, but I will save what he does. This is the same team who made Touching the Void, another documentary sports movie we're gonna get to soon. I don't think Deep Water, this documentary, does enough as it could with such fantastic source material. And we all remember when we were in first grade and we were taught how to be a good writer. It's not the content you have, it's how you write, it's how you tell the story. You should be able to make an incredible movie out of MMA. You know, you should be able to make an incredible movie out of any sport. And I don't think they do the source material enough justice. It's a very conventional documentary, Deep Water. And finally, the problem for Deep Water is I think Ben Affleck is making a movie that was supposed to come out in 3 months called Deep Water. It's a movie about like a couple who have an open marriage.
Yeah, I think I've seen that. I gotta imagine that's been pushed back.
Yeah, I'm sure that's been pushed back, but suffice to say, once that does come out, you will never ever be able to find Deep Water again on the internet, the documentary about that came out in 2006. So if you were ever gonna see it, I would say see it before Ben Affleck's movie comes out. As it is, when you look for Deep Water nowadays online, you get the Deep Water Horizon. Peter Berg.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. As it is, it's hard to find Deep Water, but it's going to be very difficult soon. I'm going to go for Tokyo Olympiad. Respect the Olympics. Respect the classic. It's going to move on. Let's see who it's facing in the second round. Number 2, Borg versus McEnroe. Came out in 2018, the magical year for tennis movies. And it's going up against number 15, Touching the Void, that documentary I just referred to. To think if Deep Water would have won, it would have been the only face-off in this tournament, potentially the director facing off his own movies against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, Borg McEnroe Tennis. Number 15, Touching the Void, 2001, a climbing movie.
I've got to go Borg McEnroe because, honestly, just because of Shia. It's got a good cast. It's got a really interesting story. The guy who plays Bjorn Borg, I cannot pronounce his name. I'm not going to do him the injustice, but Shia LaBeouf, to me, is one of those actors that almost anything he's been in, I mean, and he's had his ups and downs off screen. I mean, he is one of the most talented guys in the business. Just this past year, both Honey Boy and Peanut Butter Falcon, fantastic. He is very compelling. He's a very good pick to play John McEnroe.
He was born to play McEnroe.
This movie didn't completely land. It is worth checking out just to see LaBeouf. I'm very convinced he's going to win an Oscar at some point.
Assuming he keeps it together.
That's a big if. But if he keeps it together, I am certain that he will win an Oscar. He is that talented.
Borg vs. McEnroe is actually one of the origin stories of this tournament. The real origin story, as listeners know, is Hoop Dreams. That said, Borg vs. McEnroe came out in 2018 as well. As I said, it was like the year of tennis movies. There was a bunch of them that year. After, I think there had been nothing. And then there had been like Wimbledon, which sucks. And then all of a sudden, Borg vs. McEnroe and a bunch of other good ones came out. And I loved it. It was my number one movie, I think, for the first half of the year until the real public thing. I think it's really, really good. I think what it captures, which some of the best sports movies capture, and frankly, some of the best sports movies capture this in a way that people, as I said, people love to hate on sports movies. I think the best of them, they capture the drive to excel. And I think the drive to excel is such a core, like, human element that is deep inside of us, no matter, you know, in what context, not only sports. And some of the better sports movies, they really focus on that. They really focus on what drives these people, like TT3D, you know, what drives these people to do this beyond any reason. And to be fair, Touching the Void does it as well, but I felt for a dramatic movie, Borg and McEnroe, each of them are such fantastic characters. They're so different, and both actors nail it in terms of why do each of these elite athletes want to succeed at any cost, and they're so different. And I also love A La Warrior. I love a sports movie where you're really, you have a, you know, you're going for both of them, and maybe also you're not going. I don't know about you, Kyle, but in Borg vs. McEnroe, I didn't know. I'm not enough of a tennis guy. I didn't actually know the outcome of the match. It's one of the most famous tennis matches of all time, but I didn't know who won. So when I saw the movie, I didn't know. And each of them was sort of lovable, but also hateable at the same time, where I wasn't sure which one of them I wanted to win.
It was very much like Warrior. You have a pulling interest for both guys.
I thought of that before. Borg vs. McEnroe and Warrior have a certain simpatio. To me, this is the hardest matchup of the Miyagi region, without a doubt. And that's because, as I referred to, Touching the Void goes places that few movies I've ever seen do. I told someone recently, I think it might be my second favorite sports documentary after Hoop Dreams. To me, it's an all-timer. It's very special. It's also a movie that people just don't know about.
Yeah, most documentaries, unless it's like a free solo, do kind of fly a little under the radar.
Tell people what it is. In 1985, these two British dudes decided to go climb a very difficult, icy rock face in Latin America. They were both pretty professional, pretty confident in themselves. And so they kind of skipped on some safety precautions. And as you would imagine, they made it to the top, but on the way down, all shit broke loose. And it became a complete epic. And yet what the movie does so well, it has actors playing them, showing some of the tension in the movie and some of the tension in the story. And yet it also is a documentary, and it's interviewing the two of them. And the two of them, they really don't like each other. I mean, one of them basically blames the other one for trying to, you know, let him die. And so the two characters of Touching the Void really don't get along. They have different narrative versions of what happened. The movie deals with why do people push themselves past the point of human ability, human endurance? What is the truth? Dueling narratives. I remembered my heart was in my mouth the last 40 minutes of the movie.
It's like a combination of like Free Solo, Everest, and 127 Hours.
127 Hours is a good reference. This is the hardest one for me. I could go either way. I could go for Borg vs. McEnroe. I don't know, maybe even going to the Final Four, winning this entire region. But I'm going to give my vote for Touching the Void. And therefore, this is, I believe, the final first-round matchup of the Miyagi region. Let's jump to see what Jim, our tiebreaker, said. Jim said Borg vs. McEnroe. It's going to be
Hell
Borg
yeah,
vs.
Jim.
McEnroe. Jim and you. Jim has voted for you every time. I have never spoken to Jim directly, so he's getting his voice heard. Long past due. Jim, let's see if you're going to be needed here. We have Tokyo Olympiad going up against Borg vs. McEnroe. I think it's fair to say, Kyle, your vote is going to have to be for Borg vs. McEnroe, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tokyo Olympiad is a classic. Watch it if we miss the Olympics this year. But it's not going to beat either Borg or Void. And therefore, Borg vs. McEnroe is going to get my vote. It's going to get your vote. And I see it even gets Jim's vote. Jim actually has, again, as I said, he has breaking away than Breaking Away and running through the rest of this.
Attaboy, Jim.
He has Breaking Away, beating Bull Durham, beating Shaolin Soccer, beating everything, beating Borg vs. McEnroe, beating Sandlot. I won't spoil his bracket to say who he has going all the way. Yeah, he's fully on the bike. Wow. So he's
Dennis Quaid right now.
He is watching, I think it's an 8-pack. I was stunned because I'm so used to seeing Dennis Quaid as an older man. When I started watching Breaking Away and you realize immediately in the beginning of the movie that's Dennis Quaid, and then you know, you're like, oh, he's really ripped. It made me reappreciate every older Dennis Quaid sports movie, knowing that, hey, this guy brought it. He was in shape when he was, you know, my age. Let's look at our final four that we have from the Miyagi region. We have Sandlot, Any Given Sunday, Bull Durham, and Borg vs. McEnroe. Of these four, which one would you say?
Bull Durham is easily over Borg McEnroe, and Sandlot easily over Any Given Sunday. Bull Durham vs. Sandlot is a little more difficult, but I think it's a movie that maybe even holds up a little bit better. I love Bull Durham. I think it's nearly perfect.
I think our generation probably, we didn't catch Bull Durham as small children simply because it was a little bit older material. So we probably got to it a bit later. And even if we got to it really young, it probably went over our heads.
Yeah, I didn't see it until I was in my teens.
Obviously, you know which movie Mr. Miyagi is from, right?
Oh yeah, Karate Kid.
What's a sports movie character you've seen and you're like, that's me. If I was living out that hockey, baseball, Olympics, whatever it is.
When I first started freelance writing, I was using a pseudonym, and the pseudonym was Crash Davis, Kevin Costner's character from Bull Durham. You know, just the fact that he was a grinder who just loved baseball more than anything, even though it might not have been in his best interest, really identified with him. He was a guy who wasn't going to give up, didn't want to give up the game. It's an incredible performance by Costner. So that's kind of an easy answer for me. It's Crash Davis.
Every story needs the Robbins and the Costner to make it work.
And the yin and the yang.
We have to skate away. Where can listeners find you if they want to follow up with you? What are you doing now? How can people get all the Kyle they can get?
Twitter, follow me at Kyle Bandujo. That's KyleBandujo. You can catch episodes of Big Screen Sports every Monday from Phenom to the Farm, my interview series presented by Baseball America. That is available every other Tuesday. That has its own podcast feed. That is from Phenom to the Farm. Just interviewing former and current professional baseball players who signed out of high school about their experiences. So yeah, follow me on Twitter. Check it out, man. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Is your most anticipated movie that might be the last movie to come out in 2020? Who knows? Is it The Way Back? Are you going to triple down?
It is The Way Back, and it looks like I'm not going to be seeing that until it's available on Amazon Prime.
Kyle, thank you so much. We have coming up next the rest of the Tournament of Champions sports movies. Until then, catch Kyle on his other podcast. There you go.